Ninth,
is it? The Hall of Francine Snyder. What do you call this place right in here?
Canoe Run. That's Canoe Run.
Canoe Run. Area.
Run.
Two days ago on the 7th, we did an interview here. Hugh Rogers and I did with it's all right.
Hello.
With Barbara and Bobby Hevner.
Look at my tail. Say, look at my tail.
And even though the interview lasted for 4.5 hours, I still came to find I have questions. Well, what a story.
Yeah. Damn fight, period. But they're cooking. Look, I know. I know you're a pig.
The Skin Creek area that haven't moved. It's hot. Louie and Beth live on about 300, maybe 350 acre farm. They own a piece of it. It was Louie's dad's place where Louie grew up. Probably one of the finest farms in West Virginia. It's just a gorgeous place. Here, wait, that one's still cold. And it's just been really rough on Louie and Beth and Jack. Unlike Barbara and Bobby, though, Jack hired himself a hotshot lawyer out of Clarksburg, and he got a good bit of money for his place. Money doesn't want or doesn't need.
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic. Enough. Honey, I'll be more than happy to get it for you if you can just wait. See how the water's starting to boil?
It's scheduled for one of the park rangers' residents, I think. So they haven't been too hostile to make Jack leave, as long as he's living there. No, the house is somewhere.
They're going to run him off and then give it to a park ranger?
Right.
There's a place called Cage Cove in North Carolina. It's in the Smoky Mountain National Park. Have you ever been there?
No.
When they went in there to make a park out of this place, they let all the families in this cove stay.
Yeah, the Park Service will do that. The Corps won't. We try to, you know, especially in the recreation lands and the wildlife mitigation lands, there's no sense for the people to have to leave and the DNR to take over when the farmers are the ones that have kept the area good for wildlife. It's not the DNR that does that. So when the farmers leave, the land will grow up. Then the DNR will have to bring crews in to clear off the land and plant food for the wildlife. Doesn't make much sense. Typical state government, federal government. Where do we want to start? We want to start with Barbara's story?
Sure, why don't we start with that?
She knew, you know, when she was condemned, when Barbara was condemned, we had a farm condemned at the same time. And she just chose not to have anything whatsoever to do with it. So every approach they tried to make to Barbara, she just totally ignored them. And then after the condemnation, you know, she hasn't been the only person that stayed in the area. A lot of people have still stayed past the date they were told to leave by. And up until this time, except for one incident where they tried to evict a tenant, and they finally backed off on that and gave him a few more months and agreed to leave then at the end of a certain period. So when she first received a letter telling her that the Corps was moving for a writ of assistance, which meant the eviction, she called me, and I told her that at this point, you know, even though she hadn't participated before, she really needed to get legal advice because I wasn't sure what the legal procedure would be if she didn't show up at that hearing, you know. So she did talk it over with her lawyer, and he agreed to go to the hearing for her.
Was this Brooke?
This is Brooks, yeah. No lawyer as far as I'm concerned. Well, he went to the hearing, and at the time, the Corps filed an affidavit with the court. They said in that affidavit that the reasons they wanted her to leave for were, one, that she was in the way of Route 30 construction, and two, that she was setting a bad example for other people that they wanted to leave in the project area. For those people would say, well, if Barbara's still there, why should we have to leave? So later we pointed out to them the fact that Route 30 is at the other end of the county. You know, she's nowhere near Route 30. And, you know, that they would never need that property. It'd be years and years before anything is done to that property. And at that time, you know, the lawyers might have been able to have done something to have folded off, you know, but Brooks just didn't move on doing anything for her in that line. So then she received a letter telling her that that the writ of assistance was granted and that she would be evicted. So it wasn't but a few days after she got that letter then that the federal marshal showed up for the first time. And there was no date on that writ of assistance either. It didn't say you have to leave by, you know, November the 20th or November the 10th. There was no specific date on it, Michael.
You saw it?
Yeah. Her John Probaugh looked that stuff over for. And so when the federal marshal then showed up, of course, Barbara was pretty frightened at this time. I mean, she's been brave through the whole thing, but she was scared to death.
Well, sure she was.
And she called me. After each one of these steps, she'd call me and tell me what would happen, you know. And she called me that day, and she said, well, he was here. And I said, who? And she said, Satan. I said, you mean the federal marshal? And she said, yeah. I said, what'd he say, Barbara? And he told her that, by golly, they had to leave, and that if she didn't leave, that he would have her arrested, and that everything in her house would belong to the federal government, which is just blatantly untrue. And he said that they'd put her stuff out on the road, and he just said all kinds of harsh things. He threatened the dog. And whether he actually came right out and said the dog would be killed or if he just led them to believe that that would happen, he just said everything he could to frighten them into leaving. That's what he did. He made it just as, you know, made himself not nice, but he made himself extremely harsh. And I think his method was then to frighten her into leaving on her own. So at this point then, we got in touch with Bob Wise's office, and I called West Virginia Legal Services Plan and asked John Probaugh to look into it to see, one, if there was anything we could do legally to stop it, and two, to apprise the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Corps of the fact that this was an unusual situation, that Barbara wasn't refusing to leave out of stubbornness, but that she had this deep-seated religious conviction that it was wrong for her to leave, and that it wasn't a normal situation, and if they would give us enough time, that maybe we could talk her into leaving on her own. I mean, from our point of view, the publicity of it would have been wonderful. You know, I mean, they couldn't have done anything better if we'd have scripted it out for them to have made themselves look like the real villains that they are. But I was worried about her mental health, because she told me I needed to have the same faith that she had, and that she really had put her trust and faith in God, and that she was never going to have to leave there. And I was really concerned about what would happen to her mental health, you know, if this happened this way. So Bob Wise's office, I talked to Steve Cohen, who is an assistant with him, and they called the U.S. Attorney's Office, and you'd have to ask him who the lady was he talked to, but he did make her aware of the situation, and she did agree to grant some time. And John Probaugh also talked to the U.S. Attorney's Office and pointed out the misstatements that the Corps had made in the affidavit they filed for the writ of assistance, And the U.S. Attorney's Office's response was, well, we own the property and we really don't even have to give her a reason for leaving. You know, they filed an affidavit, but we could fight it all we wanted and eventually the outcome would be the same. They're the landlord and they own the property and they can do anything they damn well pleased with it. And legally, they were, that was the way it was, and it was their property. So we all had felt, and I... You have to be quiet, okay? Just be quiet a little bit. The U.S. Attorney's Office, Mucklow, told John Probaugh from Legal Services that there wasn't anything sacred about... See, the federal marshal had told Barbara that he was coming on, like, the following Friday. I don't know if she told you or not, but it was the anniversary of her husband's death. And she thought that they had picked that date on purpose to hurt her that much more. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, but... So he said the U.S. Attorney's Office agreed there wasn't anything sacred about that date. And that, yes, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't press the eviction for a while. Obviously, they failed to notify the federal marshal's office. And John Probaugh was concerned that that might be the case. And he himself tried to contact this Ron Donnell to let him know that we were watching and that, you know, these kind of tactics wouldn't go. He didn't get a hold of Donnell. He did talk to another federal marshal in that office. So the federal marshal's office knew that it was going to be a pretty rough situation. And that, more than anything, I think, moved to convince me that they handled this whole eviction just as brutally as they could, and their object being to frighten other people in the project, in the project area, into leaving.
So, there's this problem in my mind. Barbara signed the check that they sent her.
Problem with the money, yeah.
And so legally.
It doesn't matter if you signed the check or not, Michael. All they
I understand that, but she had knowingly sold her property to the Corps.
That was done when her property was condemned. Whether she agreed to accept the money or not makes no difference.
It doesn't?
No, Many people have their money still sitting. For years, she had that money still sitting in the court in Elkins, you see. The money itself, whether she accepted the money or not, has nothing to do with the eviction itself. They could have made her leave any time from the day they filed the papers in federal court, and that's all they have to do, is they simply file a paper that says, this property now belongs to the federal government. And then they publish it in the newspaper, and there's a few other little legal things that go along with it.
But this has been their argument, right?
They didn't make that argument until they didn't make that argument till after the fact.
Till after the fact, okay.
Right.
But it does put a hole in her whole position, doesn't it, in a way? Because here, she says that that she's responsible to this higher power.
Right.
That's what she tells the marshal. That's what she tells everybody. I don't operate according to what you all are laying down for me, because I'm in touch with this higher power, and that's where I get my orders. She takes the money, she deposits it in an account, and begins drawing interest off of it.
Right.
She's really operating on two standards there, it could be argued, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think so in a way. What happened was, until her condemnation was settled, that money just sat in Elkins. Now, she had every right to use that money all along. That money was hers. Once it was deposited in the federal court, it belonged to her. And she could have withdrawn that money and used it at any time. But she didn't, and she did it with the idea of being in her mind that the dam would be stopped, the money would be returned, and the property would be hers again. So then, after her condemnation was settled, after the condemnation was decided by the commissions, by the commissioner, the Corps sent the check to her attorney. She didn't request that the money be sent. It was sent to her attorney. And she had 90 days whether to accept it or return it. And you see, if she would return it, then she would have lost it. She would have lost everything.
I see.
So her attorney then, knowing that... that she couldn't accept the money and still keep her pension, and that she didn't want the money, and that she didn't want to sell her property to him. The best thing they could come up with was to deposit the money in an account and start gaining interest on it, you know. They had to do something with this check that they didn't ask for, that but was forced on them, or she would have lost everything. It was, it was in a way, I suppose, the best thing they could have done, at the time, and in a way, it was the worst thing, I mean, because she was still hoping that she could save her pension.
Mm-hmm. How could she have saved her pension?
Well, because, there was some question, and there was question from the Corps that, it was a situation, say, like capital gains tax, where if she'd have taken that money and reinvested it in like property, that wouldn't have affected her pension.
Uh-huh.
And then be drawing the interest off of it. Yeah, but see, had she gone ahead and invested in like property, I mean, at the same time, you have to remember that politically, we had Bob Wise moving in Congress. You know, we had gotten the dam stopped in the House of Representatives. There was a lot of hope, Michael, that this thing would be stopped. And she didn't want, she didn't want, of course, to be in the situation where there she has another piece of property and, nowhere to go then if the dam stopped, not have any money to buy her place back. So it was a different attorney, I think. I know it's awful to say, but I really believe this. It could have been handled a whole lot better if she'd had somebody different representing her. I mean, any attorney worth their salt had to have known that simply by endorsing the check, she was accepting it, and there was her pension was gone right then. But, either he didn't, or he didn't tell her, or if he told her, she wouldn't accept it, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But money has never been the issue in Barbara's mind. I mean, that the money into that thing was forced on her. Because they sent the check to her, and then she had this check, and she had to do something with it.
And $60,000 was for to buy a not only a home place, but a whole business.
Wasn't very doggone much.
There was no way they could relocate. And
it's going to take everything she got. And see, half of the money, of course, is Bobby's, and half of it is hers. The property was owned jointly by them. It was willed jointly to them by Barbara's husband. So then they're in the situation where it would take every penny they have to relocate themselves in a like situation. And then she doesn't have anything to live on monthly then. I mean, that $300 a month she got made the difference between those two making it and not making it. And they could augment their income, well enough to get along with what they sold from the nursery and what they could raise in their garden, plus Barbara does embroidery work, and she sells that, handwork. So they got along just fine. And they would have continued to have gotten along just fine if the government had left them the hell alone. But now here they are, confronted with the situation, and not only having to go against their belief, their religious belief, that the project was going to be stopped, they had all. They just were in total conflict between. Now, what do you do with the money? What could she have done? And I'm sure Brooks advised her that she couldn't not accept it, or she would have lost it forever. And of course, as it looked more and more like we weren't going to be able to stop the thing. I mean, as Bird got a lot more hyper in Congress and really did the act that he did. As it got to look blacker and blacker. There she is. She's got the money. We know what to do. And I'm sure that Brooks advised her to do what she did. So, in her mind, in a way, she never really did get that money. Even though, Bobby was using part of the money. I don't know how to explain how you feel about something like that happens. You just have to put yourself in that kind of a situation. It sounds... On the surface, it sounds one way, but yet here you are. This is everything that you own in the world. You didn't get enough for it. You're going to lose your pension. And I think she was to the place where she tried to salvage whatever she could salvage from it. And at the same time, so on the one level, she was being practical, and on the other level, she was going along with her moral convictions, I suppose you could say. Yeah, it's a real problem. It just was handled badly. Just handled really badly. Of course, she didn't tell us at the time that anything about that money, so You know, she kept telling me that she didn't know where the money was. And she knew that once people knew, she was going to lose that pension. And that's why she did that.
Well, she told me yesterday that she still had all the money. And that if the dam would stop, she said she'd give it back to them quicker than they give it to her.
Yeah, that's absolutely the way she feels about it.
So that I took to be a summary of her.
Other people feel the same way.
Are there other people in the same financial position, do you think?
Probably not as badly off as Barbara is.
But whose pensions?
So many of our people you see are older and they're dealing with Social Security rather than the veterans. It's because of the kind of pension that she got. See, she's too young for Social Security.
She's 50, right?
Yeah. So she's got a long ways to go before they could get any help through Social Security. And the veterans was the only thing open to her. And if she would never dream of getting food stamps or going on welfare or something like that. I mean, now that's a whole different thing, you see, from the veterans' pension, which she felt she was entitled to.
Well, of course she was entitled to.
Whereas, in her mind, food stamps or welfare would be welfare, and she would never do that. So, and yet, I see where she's coming from, you know, in her mind. It's perfectly justified. But, yeah, you know, it lost her an awful lot of sympathy because people just, you'd have to put yourself in the place of depending on knowing that if one thing you have, you've got $300 every month coming in guaranteed. And that if you got sick or Bobby got sick or whatever happened to you, that money would still come. And, you know, to face losing that security was just, you know, just more than they can accept. And so that's, you know, yeah, she'd give the money back in a minute if she could add her place. Everybody would. Most everybody in this project area said the same thing. And when we were working on writing a deauthorizing bill, hoping we could get the project stopped, that was the main thing that we were interested in, that the landowners were able to buy their property back. And, you know, there are people that even the house is gone and they take the land back in a minute. But then several of our people have been condemned and have their money sitting in the bank and they've never touched it. You know, probably not as much recently that they're gone ahead with the dam construction, but all along that's what people have felt, that they weren't going to bother that money. And it gains a little bit of interest, finally. You know, Maxwell had it there for a while where that money was... The money is deposited by the Corps with the court. And held on deposit, sort of like an escrow account.
And the court draws the interest from it.
The court wasn't even drawing interest from this money for a long time. I mean, Maxwell was just sending it out at different banks in the Elkins area, and the federal government wasn't receiving interest on it.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But now the law says that that money has to be drawing interest because, you see, say you own a house and a piece of ground. Let's just take a simple case, say... And don't even count your farm. You own a house and a piece of ground, and your house is condemned at $20,000 or $30,000. It's never enough to replace what you have. It's hardly ever been enough in this project area, so that some people have had to go out and assume a mortgage, you know, to try to get another place. But then in the meantime, from when your place is condemned and when your condemnation trial comes up and is litigated, almost everybody has gotten more money going through trial. And so you don't have any idea until that point how much money you have to get another place. So that I can give you an example of, say, Frieda Fisher, who was condemned at $14,000, her house. I think she eventually got like $30,000 from the court. Well, she couldn't take $14,000 and do anything with it. She had to wait until her condemnation trial was settled. But it doesn't make any difference to the federal government because you have to leave. If they want you to leave when they tell you to leave and it doesn't have anything to do with when your condemnation trial is settled and you know the final amount you have to work with.
I guess the point of all this is that Barbara still has every dime of the money the Corps gave her.
Right.
And would, in the next 5 minutes, give it all back to them.
I think she'd give all that money back if she could just get that land back. Right. If she could just get her nursery back. Yeah.
I was over there day before yesterday, and they backed the dozer around the course through several of the beds of fruit trees and so on when they were knocking the house down.
Did she tell you the story about her dishes? I think about finding her broken dishes.
Yeah, I saw some of the broken dishes there.
Yeah.
Well,
see, that was one of the points that we had such a hell of a time trying to make the Corps and the movers understand. Those dishes were a wedding present to Barbara, and they were extremely meaningful. Those were things that she had food in the refrigerator. And that wasn't worthwhile to them to empty the food and pack the dishes. So they just destroyed it. And yet those dishes were part of that original wedding set that she had gotten. And, you know, I kept telling them there would be a pile of newspapers and they didn't want to pack them. Well, I knew that she'd kept all the articles, you know, ever published about the dam. If she got a newspaper about it, she kept it. And that's what those papers were. But they weren't going to pack that because that wasn't meaningful to them.
Well, they'd like to have seen it destroyed anyway, I guess.
Well, they didn't want to have to do the work, that was for sure. So, the long and the short of it was, and to me the bottom line of the whole thing, is that through Bob Wise's office and through the Legal Aid Service, they knew that this was an unusual situation and that this woman needed help. And that we were willing to do everything we could to get counseling, her minister, you know, to have support people there. And yet, 10 days later, they moved in and evicted her in one of the most brutal fashions of any eviction that I have ever heard of in all my dealings with core projects across country. It was just absolutely brutal. I mean, they started out by scaring her to death. And so she wasn't even sleeping at night for fear they'd come at night. Of course, I had told her that she didn't have to worry, that they had told us that they wouldn't be there. You know, they wouldn't come that Friday. She could relax and that they were going to give us some time. So maybe we could get this thing worked out. It's true, she probably wouldn't have left on her own anyway. But had I been there or her attorney been there, you know, or any kind of help for her been there, she wouldn't end up being handcuffed and chained. You know, Bobby wouldn't have had bruises up and down his arms. And they would have been treated with a little dignity. And that's exactly what the Corps didn't want. And the federal marshal admitted to one of the reporters, a television reporter, she asked him why the phone was damaged. And he said, "I didn't rip it out of the wall." And she said, "I know it wasn't ripped out of the wall. I saw for myself that the phone cord had been cut. Why did you do that?" And he said, "Because we didn't want her to call for help. They didn't want anybody there. They wanted to make an example of this lady and her son. And of other families that they could have chosen to do the same thing too, they picked the most vulnerable, the people that were least able. You know, there was no man in the family. So, you know,
a widow and an emotionally...
A widow and an emotionally dependent son. And they did it on purpose. Her house, of all the houses in the area, it'll be 5, maybe 10 years down the road before anything's done there. So we're looking a long, long time. Across the street from her, Weiss Brothers have their construction area and a trailer, said the utilities, there wasn't any need to cut the utilities or to change the utilities in any way. The road couldn't be blocked off because the Weiss Brothers Construction Company were using it. There was absolutely no rhyme or reason except, as they said in the affidavit, that Barbara was setting a bad example for other people.
Because she wouldn't deal with them.
Because she wouldn't deal with them and because she wouldn't leave. And so I think in one way they say, so on the one hand, when they say, and this has been a constant battle between us and the Corps, they say, well, she's already lived there, 3 years? We've let her live there 3 years. We have let her live in her own house, mind you, for 3 years. And we, on the other hand, say, yeah, but it'll be another 5 years or so before you need that property.
What will they need it for eventually?
It's in the recreation area.
Means?
Means they don't really need it, but they don't want her there. To quote the DNR, she is an undesirable encroachment on their recreation complex.
They said that?
Absolutely.
Where?
In writing. The DNR wants the Corps to buy out all the extra land that they can because they don't want people like me living on the edge of the project. They consider us undesirable encroachment. That's why they won't even consider the idea of Barbara being allowed to live there, even after the project's completed. Now, mind you, we're talking about a recreation complex. There's no cabins or lodges. We're talking about campgrounds and some concession stands. That's all there is with this recreation complex. I mean, it's not Pipestem where you have a big lodge and facilities like that.
Will the land be used for hunting?
Mm-hmm. But it is now. I mean, Barbara begs people to come in and hunt on her because she has a nursery and a garden, and the animals need to be controlled. So the situation won't be any different. And you can see several houses around where they force the people to leave, that those houses are still standing there, that they haven't needed them for several years. And we've tried to make the Corps understand that as far as we're concerned, and by law, under the Uniform Relocation Act, they have to do everything that they can do to ease the burden of people who are being relocated because of a federal project.
Yeah.
And in this area, where you're dealing with 65% of the people in this project area are over 65. So we're dealing with an extremely elderly population. To